Welcome to Condor Currents, the podcast that flows through the latest in computer architecture research and RISC-V innovation. I'm Ty Garibay, president of Condor Computing. This episode is brought to you by Condor Computing high-performance RISC-V processor IP from Andes Technology, the world's leading RISC-V processor IP provider with 30% market share and over 12 billion SoCs shipped. Learn more at condorcomputing.com. We've got a fantastic episode lined up today. We're diving into some really cutting-edge work on GPU tensor, compute pipelines, a fascinating look at how Ampere does performance verification at industrial scale. And on the news front, Intel's Nova Lake is making some interesting moves. There's a new RISC-V single-board computer challenger on the scene, and India just dropped a homegrown RISC-V processor. Let's get into it. All right, first up on the research side, we've got a paper out of Archive titled "A Thread Register Decoupled GPU Exception Model for Efficient Tensor Computation." This comes from Zahan Liu, Jingwen Lang, Yanji Zhou, and colleagues.
And look, the title might sound dense, but the problem they're solving is one of those things that once you hear it, you can't stop thinking about it. So let's set the stage. Modern GPS, we're talking Ampere, Hopper, Blackwell, they've all got these things called tensor cores built right into the execution pipeline. And tensor cores are essentially specialized hardware units designed to chew through matrix multiplications at enormous speed. That's the beating heart of AI workloads, transformer models, large language models, all of that good stuff, and the throughput numbers have gotten absolutely wild. Each generation, the aggregate tensor compute throughput just keeps climbing. So on paper, things look great, but here's the catch. And this is what the authors are zeroing in on: just having raw throughput doesn't mean you're actually using it efficiently. Think of it like having a massive highway with 12 lanes, but the on-ramps and off-ramps are still single lane. The capacity is there, but you've got a bottleneck getting data in and out. That's essentially the problem these researchers are diagnosing. They trace the issue back to two root causes.
Number one, fixed parallelism. Number two, coarse-grained scheduling. Now, what does that mean in practice? Fixed parallelism means the hardware assumes a certain fixed mapping between threads and the work being done on tensor cores. You've got your warp, that's a group of threads executing together. And the tensor core operation is tightly bound to how that warp is structured. There's not a lot of wiggle room. If your workload doesn't perfectly fit that mold, you're leaving resources on the table. And coarse-grained scheduling compounds the problem. When you're scheduling tensor operations at a coarse granularity, you're making big, chunky decisions about who gets to use the tensor core and when. That's fine when everything lines up perfectly. But modern AI workloads are increasingly diverse and irregular. You've got attention mechanisms, mixture of experts, all these different computational patterns that don't always play nice with a rigid, fixed scheduling model. Now, what's interesting is they also trace the evolution of how operands, the inputs to these tensor operations, get supplied in Ampere. It was register-based.
Your operands live in registers. The tensor core grabs them from there, pretty classic approach. Then Hopper and Blackwell move toward what they call redundancy-free, memory-based operand supply. That's a significant architectural shift. You're removing the redundancy in how data gets staged and delivered to the compute units, which reduces overhead, but it also changes the scheduling dynamics fundamentally. So what do the authors propose? They introduce what they call a thread register decoupled execution model. The key insight is in the name. You decouple the thread organization from the register file management in a way that gives you much more flexibility in how tensor operations get orchestrated. Instead of the thread structure rigidly dictating how tensor core work happens, you create a layer of separation that allows finer grain control over parallelism and scheduling. This is genuinely clever from a microarchitecture standpoint. Think about it like this. In a traditional kitchen, the chef is also responsible for managing the pantry. Every time they need an ingredient, they stop cooking and go grab it themselves.
What these researchers are proposing is more like having a separate prep team that stages everything the chef needs, decoupled from the actual cooking process. The chef, the tensor core, can just keep cooking without constantly context switching into pantry management mode. For those of us thinking about processor design more broadly, this kind of decoupling is a well-worn principle in architecture. We see it in out-of-order execution, in load store queues, in memory-level parallelism. The insight that applies here is that tight coupling between execution and resource management almost always becomes a bottleneck at scale. And as AI workloads keep evolving and getting more complex,
this kind of architectural flexibility is going to matter more and more. From a RISC-V perspective, this is the kind of research that informs how we think about extensible ISA design. One of the great things about RISC-V is you can bolt on custom extensions for specialized compute, and understanding how to properly decouple execution resources from thread management is directly relevant to designing those extensions well.
Definitely check the show notes for links to this paper. It's worth a careful read if you're doing any work in the GPU or accelerator space. Okay, moving on to our second paper, and this one is near and dear to my heart because it's about the unglamorous but absolutely essential work of making sure your processor actually does what you think it does before you tape it out. The paper is Performance Verification of the Ampere 1 CPU Core from Dahl, Toom, Nicholas Kelly, Aaron Lindsay, and colleagues. Now Ampere Computing, not to be confused with NVIDIA's Ampere GPU architecture, totally different company. Ampere Computing makes server-class ARM-based processors. Ampere 1 is their flagship cloud-native processor. And it's a serious piece of silicon. We're talking a chip designed to run data center workloads efficiently, high core counts, custom microarchitecture. And this paper gives us a really rare window into their industrial performance verification methodology across four generations of the Ampere 1 core. Performance verification, or PV as folks in the industry call it, is distinct from functional verification.
Functional verification is asking, does the chip do the right thing? PV is asking, does the chip do things at the right speed? And as the authors open with, as process technology scaling slows down, you know, we're not getting the same free performance lunch from Moore's Law that we used to. Microarchitectural innovation is where the gains are coming from now, which means you need to be really precise about modeling and predicting performance before you ever spin a piece of silicon. The cost implications here are staggering. A tape out at leading edge nodes costs tens of millions of dollars, sometimes more. If you find out after the fact that your pipeline has a structural bottleneck that costs you 15% performance, that's catastrophic. You either go back and respin, which is enormously expensive, or you ship a chip that underperforms. Neither is a good outcome. So getting PV right is existential for a chip company. The core of their methodology is cycle-accurate correlation between the RTL design and a trace-driven performance model. Let me unpack that a bit. RTL register transfer level is essentially the detailed hardware description of the chip.
It's incredibly precise, but also incredibly slow to simulate. A trace-driven performance model is a higher level, faster simulation that models the important performance behaviors without simulating every single gate. The trick is making sure these two models agree with each other. That's the correlation piece. Think of it like having two maps of the same territory. One is a detailed satellite image. The other is a hand-drawn topographic map. They should show the same mountains and valleys. If your topographic map says there's a mountain where the satellite image shows a valley, you've got a problem. And figuring out which map is wrong and why is the actual hard work of PV. What's impressive about their methodology is the operational cadence they describe. They run high-frequency daily regressions, meaning every single day, they're automatically running their performance models against a curated suite of workloads, catching any regressions as soon as they're introduced, in a large team working on a complex microarchitecture. This is absolutely essential.
Changes happen constantly, and you want to catch a performance regression the day it's introduced, not 3 months later when someone finally runs a benchmark. They also talk about data-driven workload curation, which is a sophisticated way of saying they don't just run random benchmarks. They carefully select and manage the workloads that best expose the performance characteristics they care about. This is harder than it sounds. You want coverage across different bottleneck types, compute-bound, memory-bound, branch-heavy, whatever is relevant to your target market, and you want your suite to stay relevant as workloads evolve. Across four generations of the Ampere 1 core, they've been refining this whole methodology, and that longitudinal perspective is what makes this paper particularly valuable. You get to see how the process matured, what broke at scale, how they fixed it. That kind of industrial knowledge is usually trapped inside company walls. So having it published is a genuine gift to the architecture community for folks doing RISC-V processor design. And at Condor Computing and Andy's Technology, we live this every day. The lessons here are directly applicable.
Whether you're building a small embedded core or a high-performance application processor, having a robust performance model that you trust and that you correlate rigorously against your RTL is the difference between shipping on time with confidence and shipping late with fingers crossed. Check the show notes for the link to this one. Highly recommended reading, all right? Let's switch gears to the news desk, and we've got some juicy stuff today. First off, Intel says Nova Lake, their next major CPU architecture, is coming to desktop PCs before servers. This is interesting on multiple levels. Intel has traditionally launched their most significant architectural innovations on the server side first. Data center customers tend to be early adopters with deep pockets and a hunger for performance, and server volume justifies the engineering investment. So when Intel announces a major new architecture, you usually see it in Xeon form before it hits core consumer chips. Nova Lake flipping that order is genuinely notable. Now, why would they do this? A few possibilities.
One is competitive pressure on the consumer side. AMD has been putting real pressure on Intel in the desktop and laptop markets, and Intel needs wins there. Nova Lake could be their answer to that pressure, and getting it to market quickly in the consumer segment could help shore up that position. Another possibility is validation strategy. Consumer workloads are incredibly diverse, and getting a broad population of users running on your new architecture can surface bugs and performance issues quickly in a way that controlled server deployments can't match. There's also the narrative angle. Intel has been through a rough few years in terms of public perception around their manufacturing and architectural roadmap. A splashy consumer launch of a major new architecture is good for brand visibility and investor confidence in a way that a quiet server launch isn't. From an architecture standpoint, what we know about Nova Lake is that it's a significant departure. Intel is reworking their core microarchitecture in meaningful ways.
The hybrid architecture approach they've been developing with performance cores and efficiency cores continues with Nova Lake. But the specifics of how those cores are designed and how they interact is supposedly seeing major improvements. The details are still sparse, but the direction is clear. Intel is betting that microarchitectural innovation, not just process technology, is the path forward. And you know what? That's exactly what that Ampere One paper was saying too. It's a theme you keep hearing across the industry. For the broader architecture community, anytime Intel makes a major architectural push, it raises the bar for everyone, it pushes AMD, it pushes Qualcomm's laptop ambitions, it pushes the RISC-V ecosystem to continue developing competitive high-performance cores. Competition is good for architecture innovation, and Nova Lake promises to be a fascinating design to study when the technical details eventually come out. Next news item, the Bitbrick K1, described as a Raspberry Pi 5 alternative with a different CPU architecture, M2 and PCIe support. Now, this is fun.
The single board computer market has exploded over the last decade, really driven by the Raspberry Pi's runaway success. And when something dominates a market that dramatically, it creates space for alternatives to carve out niches by offering something different. The Bitbrick K1 is one of those challengers. The different CPU architecture framing in the coverage is deliberately vague. And I'll say right now, check the show notes for links because the specifics matter here, but the category of alternatives to ARM-based single-board computers has been growing, and RISC-V is increasingly part of that conversation. The single-board computer space has actually been a really important proving ground for RISC-V silicon because the volume expectations are manageable, the use cases are diverse, and the community of makers and developers are often excited to try new architectures. What's specifically notable about the Bitbrick K1 is the connectivity story, M2.2 support, and PCIe expansion.
The Raspberry Pi 5 added PCIe support, and it was a huge deal for the community because it opened up all kinds of expansion possibilities: NVMe storage, AI accelerator cards, networking cards. If you're going to compete with the Pi 5, you need to be at parity on connectivity, and it sounds like Bitbrick understood that. The single board computer market might seem small in the grand scheme of chip volumes, but it punches way above its weight in terms of developer mindshare and ecosystem development. The developers who cut their teeth on a platform tend to carry those skills and preferences with them into professional projects. If RISC-V single board computers can attract a meaningful developer community, that has long-term implications for RISC-V adoption and embedded in edge applications more broadly. At Andes Technology and Condor Computing, we've seen firsthand how important the developer ecosystem is to processor IP adoption. It's not just about the silicon, it's about the tool chain, the software stack, the community. So anything that expands the RISC-V developer community is genuinely good for the ecosystem.
And finally, saving what might be the most exciting news for last, India has unveiled a homegrown dual-core 1 GHz RISC-V processor, the DHRU64. The Register had the coverage, and this is a story worth sitting with for a minute. DHRUV, the name means pole star in Sanskrit, which is a pretty evocative name for a chip you're hoping will guide your country's semiconductor future. And that's really what this is about. India has been working to build domestic semiconductor capabilities for years, and the DHRUV64 represents a significant milestone in that journey. A dual core 1 GHz processor might not sound earth-shattering,
in 2025 when we're talking about chips with hundreds of cores running at 5 gigahertz. But that's not the right frame for evaluating this. The right frame is India designed this themselves. Indian engineers architected the cores, the interconnects, the memory subsystem. That's the capability that's being demonstrated, and that capability compounds over time. You start with a dual core gigahertz chip and you build expertise, you build tools, you build confidence. The next generation is faster and more capable.
The choice of RISC-V as the ISA is really smart here, and it's honestly not surprising. RISC-V is open. There are no licensing fees, no geopolitical entanglements around ISA access, no company that can pull the rug out from under you. For a national semiconductor initiative, that openness is absolutely critical. You don't want your sovereign chip program to be dependent on a license from a foreign corporation. RISC-V solves that problem elegantly. We're seeing this pattern globally. China, India, the European Union, various countries all developing domestic processor capabilities and all gravitating toward RISC-V for exactly these reasons. It's one of the most significant structural advantages RISC-V has, and it's not going away. If anything, as geopolitical tensions around semiconductors continue, the appeal of an open, royalty-free ISA only grows. What India does next with DHRU V64 is going to be fascinating to watch. Do they push toward a higher performance version? Do they develop specialized variants for specific applications, embedded systems, edge computing, defense applications? Do they build out a domestic ecosystem around it?
All of those paths are open to them, and the talent and engineering culture in India gives them real runway to execute. For the global RISC-V community, every serious national initiative that adopts RISC-V strengthens the ecosystem. More implementations means more open source toolchain development, more research, more practitioners who understand the architecture deeply. The DHRU V64 is a win for RISC-V broadly, not just for India. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today's episode of Condor Currents. We covered some really meaty stuff, a clever new execution model for GPU tensor compute, a rare look inside industrial scale CPU performance verification,